Okay, welcome back, everyone. This is the final shiur in the series for this summer in 2017, Nagzot Vodmir. We will discuss tonight the last topic. Really, there was another topic on the flyer that we didn't get to, mostly because you could look it up online. It's pretty simple, the rules and guidelines of eating. I mean, it's not simple at all, but there are rules and guidelines written up about eating at Starbucks, drinking at Starbucks. It's kind of would be, whatever, it would be a little boring to discuss as opposed to some of the other topics, although I guess it leaves up to you to think if it's any more boring than the topics we've discussed. But the last topic I figured we'd discuss tonight is the topic of coffee on Shabbos. What's interesting about coffee on Shabbos is immediately what jumps to a person's head about coffee on Shabbos is cooking, bishul, making coffee on Shabbos. But the truth is, there are more than one other issue that comes up with coffee on Shabbos, besides for the bishul aspect, besides for cooking. It will be a majority of this year. The majority of the show will be some concepts about Bishul on Shabbos, some introduction to basic things about Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, that are important for soup, for coffee, for tea, for all those types of things. But there are other issues that come up on Shabbos as well. Two that we won't discuss are the issue of using timers to set a machine that will cook your coffee for you. So timers in general is a nice discussion in Hilchos Shabbos. A lot of people do use timers for lights, for air conditioner, for plata, for all those types of things. So that's something definitely to discuss, not so simple. And in terms of coffee, it's even less simple to be matir, but it is something to discuss at a later point. There's also something called a French press. I don't know if people ever know what that is, use that. It's you like squash the grinds down into the cup and then pull it up. You soak the beans in the water and then you pull the beans out. So that's a completely separate issue. Whether or not it's bishul is the first part of the shiur, but the other part that we're not going to discuss is that might be an issue of borer on Shabbos, because you're separating after you plug them in. After you punch them down, you're going to be separating this coffee from the water. So that's a whole other issue that we're not going to talk about now. I would refrain from using a French press on Shabbos. Yontif might be a different issue. But those things we won't get to. What we'll get to is what's on the Makoros sheet. So the first thing is coming into Shabbos. But actually, let's start with leaving Shabbos, because the topic is either Kiddush or Avdalah, making Kiddush or Avdalah with coffee or tea. So they say a story. It's in a sefer called Ashkafta de Rebbe. Ashkafta de Rebbe is a sefer, a book, written by a man named Rifkin. His last name is a Talmid Chacham from, forgetting which country, which state now, he was in America. But he was originally, he's a Lubavitcher Chassid, from old Lubavitcher Chassid. He was there, Shalom Dov Ber Rifkin or something, obviously, whatever, something like that. So he was there in the week or weeks that ensued that kind of preempted the death of the Mittler Rebbe. The Mittler Rebbe was the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe was the Baal Tanya, the founder of the entire movement of Lubavitch, the Alter Rebbe. And after him was his son, the Mittler Rebbe. I think he was actually also Shalom Dov Ber Schneerson, whatever they called him back then. And then there was a third Rebbe. And after the third Rebbe, there were really three more, whatever it was. But he was the Mittler Rebbe because he was the middle of the first three. So they called him the Mittler Rebbe in Yiddish, is the Admor Hemtzai, the middle Rebbe. So when the Mittler Rebbe was dying, so this Mechaber, this author, was there at the time. He was there, he saw everything that was going on. And based on everything they saw, he wrote his notes about what was going on. He wrote an account of what was happening. And then in the footnotes, he would have a halachic discussion about different things that happened during those weeks. A very interesting book. He didn't want to publish it originally, but I think the next Rebbe wanted him to because he saw the godless of the book, whatever. He writes an Hakdama about that. But either way, so there's this book called Ashkafta de Rebbe, which is about the death of the Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. And in that book, it says that in the moments right before the Mittler Rebbe passed away, in those very last moments of his life, so the Mittler Rebbe asked for one thing. What did he ask for? Guess. A cup of coffee, yeah. So that's an interesting thing to ask for. He wants his last, what? He wants his last geschmack right before he leaves Olam Hazeh to go to Olam Haba. It doesn't sound like a very rabbish story. Not such a simple thing that a guy would be so holy and asking for a cup of coffee right before he dies. Such a strange thing. So the answer is that it was Motzei Shabbos, and the Mittler Rebbe wanted that the last moments of his life be spent. Again, he did end up saying Kriyat Shema, the book says, but he wanted that if these are the last moments, he should say Avdalah after Shabbos. He should say Avdalah. Now, either because it wasn't available or because his health would not allow for it, or he simply couldn't, you know, take the wine, so he couldn't drink yayin, he couldn't drink wine for Avdalah. So he asked for a cup of coffee to make Avdalah, and that's what he did. He made Avdalah, and he notes in a parenthesis over there that a similar thing happened with the Baal Tanya, with the original Lubavitcher Rebbe, that when he was dying, it was also Motzei Shabbos, and he also asked for a cup of coffee and made Avdalah on that cup of coffee. So two Lubavitcher Rebbes had the same practice. And the question is, not that we should ever be in the case where it's at our last breath that we're having to ask this. Clearly, in the case in the story, we're not really judging. That was the biggest shas dachak you can imagine, and whatever he wanted to do made a lot of sense. But in a normal case, if you don't have wine, or if you do have wine, can you make kiddush, can you make havdalah on coffee, on tea? Is that an acceptable practice? Is that something that we would really do, even if we weren't chas v'shalom on our deathbed? So, the Gemara in Pesachim on Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, source number one on the source sheet, has an interesting story. It says, one time, a certain Amora, Meymar, came to a town. He came to a certain town, and when he got to town, he spent Shabbos there. Good. After Shabbos, he wanted to make Havdalah, and they brought him, he asked for, wine to make Havdalah, and they brought him beer. They brought him beer instead of wine. So apparently they didn't have any wine to give him, so he said no thanks. He refused the beer, and he went to sleep without eating, because you're not supposed to eat before your Kiddush. He got wine the next day, he made Havdalah the next day, and he was able to eat after he had made Havdalah on Sunday. That's the story in the Gemara. The Gemara says, the next year, he scheduled a getaway to this town once again, and the same thing happened. On Matzei Shabbos, he asked for wine to make Havdalah, and the people in the town brought him beer. They brought him beer again. And he realized, if you look in the bold, Amar Ihachi Chamar Medinahu. If it's true that they keep offering this beer instead of wine, it must be that the national drink, Chamar Medina, the national wine, the classic drink that's used in this county, in this town, is not wine. The classic drink that's used over here is beer. So they didn't have wine, they gave me beer last year. This year I realize, if they're giving me beer all the time, it must be that that's the normal drink to drink around here. And therefore, it says the Gemara, Ivdil, the Ta'am Midi. He made Havdalah, and he ate, he thought it was good Havdalah, on the beer. So what happened between those two times? So the Rashbam points out that apparently there's such a thing that if there's no wine, this is what the Rashbam makes a point of saying, if there's no wine, then you use something called Chamar Medino. Chamar Medino means a drink that, well, we'll see what it means exactly, but it means a drink that's nationally accepted. What exactly the Hagdar of that is very important, but that's what the Gemara says. Now the Gemara only says this about Havdalah. So what about Kiddush? So the Rambam says no. Very interesting. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, I think in the 29th parak, says no. Havdalah, yeah. Havdalah you can make on Chamar Medina, you can make on beer. That's the only example we have right now. But if you wanted to make Kiddush on Friday night or Shabbos day, it sounds like from the Rambam that would not be allowed. But the Beis Yosef quotes the Rosh and Simon Yud Zayin in that Gemara Pesachim and other Rishonim who say that it is okay for Havdalah, it is okay for Kiddush, there is no difference, no distinction. If you are stuck and you need to use something other than wine, you would be allowed to use beer or whatever would be satisfying the need for the definition of, Chamar Medina, that would be okay for Kiddush or Havdalah. That's what the Rosh Paskins, and if you look in source number one, the second half, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Simon Reish Ayin Beis, in Simon Reish Tzadi Vav, later on, he quotes it about Havdalah. Here it's Reish Ayin Beis, which is Hilchos Kiddush. And that's what he says, that even for Kiddush, b'makom she'ein yayin matzo, if there's no wine whatsoever, yesh omrim, that you're makadesh on sheikhar, which is beer, or shar mashkin, which are fitting into the category of Chamar Medina, chutz min amayim, absolutely never can we make Kiddush or Havdalah on water. That is off limits, but everything else is okay if need be. So there's another story, which is an interesting story. There's a book called Olam HaShal Abba, which probably a lot of you have not heard of, but it's an interesting book also. It's sort of like a history book. It's really actually like a fun history book. There's a lot of jokes in there, a lot of light reading. It's pretty thick, but it's light reading. So it's written by a man, it's written by someone for his father. So Rav Pinchas Miller wrote the book. He was the Rav in Nazareth in Israel after the war, and he wrote about his father of Asher Angelo Miller's experience in pre-war Europe, mostly in Hungary, mostly in Oberland Hungary, also a little bit in Unterland, but he writes mostly about Oberland Hungary, Pressburg, the major communities, the major Rabbanim that exist in Hungary. A lot of the Rabbanim he writes about I never heard of until I read the parts of the book, but he writes about a lot of famous Rabbanim also. So he says, his father used to learn in a certain town, I can't pronounce the name, so I'm not going to say it, but he used to learn in a certain town, and that town where he learned, so the Balabatim would take him in for dinner, they'd take him in for lunch, they'd take him in for Friday night and Shabbos, and he would eat all sorts of nice foods. He would eat hot fish, he says, he would eat, drink nice wine, he would have white bread for challah. It was a beautiful meal always. And at one point he decided his heart really desired to go to Pressburg to learn where the Chassam Sofer used to be, the Rav, but wasn't anymore. It was the Shevet Sofer at that point. But he wanted to go learn in Pressburg, so he went to Pressburg to learn. And the first thing that struck him was the immense poverty that was existent in Pressburg. There was really not much to eat every day, not much to be had in terms of gashmius. He made very little money as a bachar in the yeshiva, and it was very difficult for him, but at least he was looking forward to Shabbos. And when he got to Shabbos, he went to the the cafeteria where all the bachrim ate together, and he sat down, he was all excited for his first gishmaka meal. The whole week he was here, it wasn't so gishmak, now finally he gets a good meal, and he sits down and they bring out two, he says it was the size of an egg, kibitza, two rolls, whole wheat, dark bread, that didn't look so crusty, it didn't look so appetizing at all. Two loaves like that for Lechem Mishnah and a cup of coffee with milk. That's what they brought him. And that was the meal. The Bachrim started eating. They made their Kiddush and started eating. And this Asher Anshel Miller, he was crying. He couldn't understand how he could possibly bring himself to live like this. He couldn't get over it. And it says in the book that eventually he got over it. He summoned up the courage to make Kiddush. And it says he made Kiddush on the bread. And he drank the coffee, you know, as his meal with the disgusting bread. But he made his Kiddush on the bread. So the question is, do you see from that story that clearly you can't make your Kiddush on the coffee? They did not have wine. They couldn't afford it. It wasn't available. So, but they had a cup of coffee and they had a piece of bread. So why did they choose to make Kiddush on the bread as opposed to the wine? So the truth is, as opposed to the coffee. So the truth is, the reason is not because you can't make Kiddush on coffee, even if you can't. That's not the reason for that story. If you look in source number one, in that Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch says very clearly that on Friday night, if you have two things, let's say you have a cup of beer and you have two rolls of bread, which one should you make Kiddush on? So the Shulchan Aruch says very clearly you should make Kiddush on the bread. That is more important on Friday night because it's more nikar, it's more noticeable that you're making Kiddush on the bread rather than making Kiddush on beer, which is a normal drink, I guess, during other points. So you should rather make Kiddush on the bread as opposed to the beer that you have at hand. Even though Chamar Medina, beer, it does sometimes satisfy the idea of wine, but still, if you have a choice between that and bread, you should choose the bread. During the day, the Shulchan Aruch says it's different. During the day, you should choose the drink over the bread. That's for other reasons that we're not going to go into now. But either way, that story, Lechora, that we just said, even though they made Kiddush on the bread, they had coffee to use, but they made Kiddush on the bread, it's not a riot, it's not a proof that coffee doesn't work. So does coffee work, or tea work, to satisfy the need for wine or Chamar Medina on Friday night for Kiddush, Shabbos day for Kiddush, and Havdalah on Matzei Shabbos? So the truth is, it's going to depend on how we understand what Chamar Medina is. What's the Hagdara? What's the definition of Chamar Medina? So some of the posts say the Hagdara, the definition of Chamar Medina, is a popular drink, a drink that people very often consume. So beer used to be a very popular drink. If you read through the Gemara, you know, it's very easy, light reading to read through the Gemara. So you'll notice that that there were a lot of Amoraim that were actually beer makers for a profession. That's what they did. So their beer was a very popular drink back then. It was a social drink. It was normal to have it. That probably changed a little bit nowadays. I don't know outside of the Jewish world how social normal it is to drink a beer regularly, but that's probably changed a little bit. The poskim say that it's not really the most popular drink anymore. And so maybe beer, some people suggest, maybe beer has left the category of Chamar Medina, but coffee maybe would fit into that category. Rav Moshe Shtermach points out, he quotes from earlier people, we'll see in a second if it's accurate or not, but Rav Moshe Shtermach points out in his Chuvos Van Hagos that maybe coffee and tea have now entered that category, a very social, normal, popular drink, and therefore those should satisfy Chamar Medina. Maybe. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Chilek Beis in Or HaChaim about soda, whether you can use soda to make Havdalah, to make Kiddush. Does that count as Chamar Medina? So he says, absolutely not. Soda is just water with flavors and bubbles. Yeah.
Is Chamar Medina only one drink, or can it be multiple drinks?
It can be multiple drinks, correct. Even if beer was still, it could still be something else in addition, correct. So so what about soda? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says soda is no good, and most of the posts can agree to this. Soda does not count as a Chamar Medina because it's a drink you drink basically because you're thirsty or because you want to get a good taste. But you don't drink it l'kavra suda. It's not something that adds to the honor, adds to the glory of the suda you're having. If you have a cup of, back then, if you had a cup of beer, so it was a way of saying this is a chash of a meal, this is a nice meal. To have a cup of soda is because you're thirsty or because you want to wash out the meal or whatever, so that does not count. Rav Moshe says, however, that b'shas d'chak, if you were stuck, if you absolutely necessary, you absolutely needed it, coffee would fit into that category. Now, he does not recommend doing this, but he said if a person was totally stuck, he had no other choice whatsoever, coffee and tea would be within that hagdara of a drink that's drunk l'chavod, like an honorable drink at a meal, and therefore it might work b'shas d'chak. But the poskim in general don't like that. Even Rav Moshe said only b'shas d'chak. The poskim in general don't like that. We've quoted before from a Pesach Eliyahu Falk, from the Dayan from Gateshead. So in his Sefer Machs Eliyahu, Shalach and Chuvas, and Chelek Aleph, Simon Lam and Dalid, he says that if a person has let's say he has a terrible disease, Chas V'Shalom, and he can't possibly drink wine, grape juice, any grape product, the disease is called Naziris, I don't know, whatever. So he can't have any grape product whatsoever. So what should he do? What should we recommend him? So, or let's just say he can't have wine, because we'll choose a case where he can give him another etza. So we can't have wine. So should he have grape juice? Or can we let him have, you know, coffee or tea? So he writes a tshuva over there and explains that really there's no way we should recommend that he have coffee or tea. We should obviously recommend that he have grape juice and not have coffee or tea. And the reason is, he gives basically three reasons, but I guess we'll list some of them. The first reason he gives is that coffee, we've mentioned in the past, coffee might not have a status of a drink. It might really just be water. We've mentioned why isn't there Bishul Akum on coffee. So one of the reasons we gave why there's no bishul akam on coffee is because really coffee is just water with some flavoring in it. Cooking water is not subject to bishul akam. So to here, coffee is just water, and you're not allowed to make havdalah or kiddush on water. So it won't work to have such a kiddush, to have such a chamer medina. It doesn't exist. So therefore, coffee and tea should be out of the question according to that. He also quotes from the halachos ketanos that a chamer medina must not only be a popular normal drink; it has to be alcoholic. It has to have alcoholic content. So beer satisfies that. Coffee and tea, unless you're putting that Irish, you know, I'm talking about, what's it called? Bailey's? Unless you're putting, yeah? Okay, yeah. Unless you're doing that, so it's really not an alcoholic drink. It's just a nice drink, a nice sweet drink with milk. So that would not count as Khamer Medina. They do quote a Masorah from the Brisker Rebbe, Valva Soloveitchik, that he said that it is okay, at least if you need to use coffee or tea for Havdalah and for Kiddush. Rav Moshe Sternbach says it's not true. He doesn't think it's... That Rav Brisker Rebbe said it's not okay. The Brisker Rebbe says it's not okay. Rav Moshe Sternbach writes that it's not true. He heard from his son that he said it is okay, and he disproves the need for alcoholic content in general. But that is something that Rav Pesach Eliyahu Falk tainas, that maybe you need alcoholic content. He has other reasons as well. But for now, that's what we see, that really beer might satisfy the requirements. Coffee and tea, it's hard to imagine, are really a chamer medina. And therefore, Rav Adi Yosef writes in his Tshuvas, Nichab Das, Nibia Omer, different places, he writes that it is close to a brach levatala for someone to make havdalah or kiddush on coffee or tea. It should be avoided at all costs. Even Rabbi Falk notes that there are poskim who would allow for it, Bashaz Dachak, Moshe allowed for it, and others. So he doesn't say it's a brach lo atala, but he says it's very, 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 very shas dechak. It's very, very, very necessary to avoid ever making a havdalah or a kiddush on coffee or tea. That's something definitely to stay away from. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted. I saw this originally in a sefer Ma'adani Shlomo. It's also in Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying that really Maker Dini thinks coffee and tea would work for Chamer Medina. They would count for kiddush and for havdalah, but it's impossible to drink that much if it's hot. If it's a hot drink, how are you going to fill your cheek with a hot drink in the fast enough time? So you let it cool down, then it's not chashim anymore. It's a gross drink at that point. So he doesn't just think there's any practical way of going about it, but Meikar Adin, he thought the definition, it was possible to have such a thing. This comes up every single year during the 9 days, when you want to make havdalah during the 9 days. So all the rabbis tell you different things to do. You should drink the wine, you shouldn't drink the wine, you should give it to a katan. How old is the katan? You should drink beer, you should not drink beer. Matzei Pesach also is a question with beer. So this is a shaila that you have to deal with for the cases where you absolutely can't use wine or it's very difficult to use wine. But coffee and tea seem not to be the way to go. Nonetheless, we saw Bishas Dechad Gadol, there is what to be somechan, and we saw a Maisa. We saw a Maisa from the Mittler Rebbe in the Baal Tanya, that Bishas Dechad Hachi Gadol Ba'olam, that they're on their deathbeds when they had no other choice, they did in fact make Havdalah on their coffee, and that is what they decided was better than not having Havdalah at all. Okay, so that's the first issue that comes up with coffee on Shabbos. The crux of the shiur, the major part of the shiur is upcoming now, is the idea of bishul, of cooking, of making coffee and tea on Shabbos. How does one go about that, and what are the issues involved with that? So, if you look in source number 2, we'll start just by sort of defining our terms. The Gemara in Shabbos on Mem Amud Beis says a story. It has a whole Shaka V'Tari about cooking oil. Okay, Shaka V'Tari not for now. But then it says a story. Pam achas nechnasti acha Rebbe lebeis hamerchatz. I, this Amora, went into Rebbe in the Beis HaMerchatz, and he asked him, am I allowed to put this container of oil into the hot bath to cook it, to warm it up? Am I allowed to put this hot, this cool oil and warm it up in the hot bathtub over here? That's a Kli Rishon. So Rebbe answered back, no, you can't do that, but what you can do is you can take the water from the hot bathtub, the source of the heat. You could empty it into a second utensil, which is called a kli sheni, and you can then put the oil into that kli sheni and heat it up in that way. So this is the first time we see a kli rishon and a kli sheni. So a kli rishon is a utensil that's being used, a vessel that's being used to cook or heat the food item, the urn that's cooking your water or keeping your water warm, the pot that's on the stove with the soup in it, that was cooked in it, and it's heated up in it, that's a kli rishon. The original source of the heat is within those walls of the kli on the fire directly. A kli sheni is the next step. So if you pour from the kli rishon into the next kli, that's your kli sheni, that's your second utensil. And says Rebbe in this Gemara, kli sheni eino mevashel. A kli sheni, that second kli that you're using after emptying the kli rishon, is not mevashel, doesn't cook. It doesn't affect any cooking process in halacha. So the question becomes, what's pshat? So if it's yatzel, let this boat, the water is hot enough that if I stuck my hand in, I would recoil, it would hurt. So it's yadzo led this boat. It's a high temperature. So when a kli rishon does cook, it's the same temperature in the kli sheni. Why doesn't it cook? What changed? What's the difference? So if you look in source number 3, Beis, on the left side, Tosfos offer one answer. Tosfos offer an answer, a little bit famous. Tosfos say that really there is a difference in science. There is a difference in metzias. There's actually a difference in the temperature. Because when you take the water from the hot kli rishon and pour it into the kli sheni's walls were cold. They were cool. So even though you're pouring that same heated water, or whatever it is, into the next kli, but the walls of the second kli are cooled down because they weren't on the fire, and therefore overall this has a cooler temperature in the kli sheni. That's what Tosfos opine, that really b'metzias, in science, there is a difference between a kli rishon and a kli sheni. A kli sheni is quantifiably cooler based on it, because of its walls, than a kli rishon. That's what Tosfos suggests, and that is an important thing to keep track of. Rashi seems to learn differently. In 3 Aleph, you wouldn't really know it from Rashi himself, which is why we put the Or Sameach, or Meir Simcha's Chidushim on the Rambam, but the Or Sameach thinks this is pshat in Rashi, a different pshat entirely. So Tosfos, I said, there's a metzias, there's actually a science over here, that a kli sheni is cooler because the walls cool down the liquid or the food. Rashi seems to learn differently, according to the Or Sameach. Rashi seems to learn that bishul has a halachic definition. Bishul is defined as cooking with fire. Okay, cooking together using fire. So oftentimes, normal times, you have a pot and it's on the fire and you're using the fire to heat up the pot to then cook the food inside of it. So even though the kli rishon, that first kli that's blocking between the fire and the food inside, it's not a fire, it's something in between a fire and the food, but since the fire is directly affecting the kli, since it's directly affecting the pot, so we look at it as if the pot itself is also cooking with fire. The pot itself is heated by the fire, so it's like the fire is heating through the pot the food inside. Lamashal, if you heat up a frying pan on a stovetop, very, very hot, then you take it off and you put it, I don't know, on the floor or something, then you crack an egg over it. So the egg will cook. Now, it's not pshat that the pot cooks the egg. If you didn't heat it up, it wouldn't cook it. The pshat is that the kli rishon absorbs the heat from the fire and it becomes part of the fire. So then, kli rishon is really part of the fire, and therefore it's halachic bishul to cook something or to, whatever, heat something up on a kli rishon which has had contact with the fire, and therefore that's the pshat in a kli rishon, and that's why it's considered bishul, because it's bishul be'esh, it's bishul with fire, to use this kli rishon. But when you go to a kli sheni, says the Or Sameach, this is Rashi's opinion according to the Or Sameach, when you go to a kli sheni, so something changed. Not in metzias, not in science, that's not what changed. What changed is that you're so far removed from the fire. It used to be that the fire directly affected this pot and directly affected the food, but now you've emptied it into another vessel, you've emptied it into another kli, you've poured it from the pot into a thermos, so now that second kli sheni didn't ever have any contact with the fire, it never met the fire. So now the second kli sheni is not halachically mevashel, it's not halachically bishel, even though in science it's the same temperature, not like Tosfos, it's the exact same temperature, but since halachically it's too far removed from the fire, you can't call that bishel anymore. You just can't call it bishel anymore. Just to flesh out that machlokas, let's say a nafkamina, a possible nafkamina. What if you have a kli sheni that is quantifiably hotter than a kli rishon? So your kli rishon was yatzal ledzbo, your kli sheni is yad nichvezbo, meaning yatzal ledzbo means if I touched it, I would recoil. But your kli sheni now is not yatzal ledzbo, it's more than that, it's yad nichvezbo. If you stuck your finger in, it would burn immediately. You would get burnt. What the definition of that is a little bit subject to dispute. But you would get burnt from the water. That's how hot it is. It's extremely hot kli sheni, hotter than a normal kli rishon. So what about there? So does that constitute bishul to use that kli sheni? So the Chai Adam writes, absolutely. We have to be machmir in Chelek Beis and Simen Chaf, I think Sef Dalid, the Chai Adam writes that you have to be machmir on a kli sheni if it's extremely, extremely hot, abnormally hot, that's considered bishul, even though normally kli sheni and mevashel, if it's so hot that you see it's going to burn him, so then it is mevashel. Now that works with whose understanding? With Tosfos' understanding, because Tosfos understood that a kli sheni is different and that it's actually scientifically cooler. But metzias, it's cooler, it's colder. Here in this case, you could say, right, definitively, that the second kli is not cooler, it's hotter, it's very hot. The kli sheni is extremely hot. And therefore, you have to be machmir for bishul and a kli sheni, even though normally a kli sheni and a vashal. The Beis Yosef disagrees, and your Adayasim and Kuf Yud. Your kli rishon was hotter in the first place, meaning if you had it in an urn, so it gets hotter than yatzal ledzbo. It gets to extremely hot. So you pour it into your kli, you press the urn down, it goes into your cup, that's your kli sheni.
Right.
Your kli sheni is hotter than yatzal ledzbo. It's yad nechvezbo, you could burn yourself in there.
Right, but it's not hotter than the kli rishon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be hotter than the kli rishon, it just has to be hotter than the definition of
what you would expect.
Correct.
To be okay.
Exactly. And the normal case we're talking about is yatzal ledzbo. This is even hotter than that. It's not hotter than that kli rishon, it's hotter than a normal one. So here it's so hot, so you can't deny the fact that it would cook. You can't deny the fact that it would be mevashel. So it's halachim mevashel as well. That fits with Tosfos, because Tosfos said the whole definition was that it's cooler, and here it's just not cooler. But the Beis Yosef in Yerodei Semin Kofiyot says differently. The Beis Yosef says that we can be makel on such a case, because halachically, like we said in Rashi, it's not mevashel. It's true, the Metzias, the science is that it's very hot. If you put a thermometer in there, you'd think it was very hot. But Lamaisa, it's so far removed from the fire that that's not halachic bishul. That's just not the definition of bishul. You can't call that bishul. And so maybe, according to Rashi, you'd have a kula over there. Either way, if you look in source number 4, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Chai Adam, that we are machmir on this. If you have a kli sheni that is extremely hot, which, like as we just illustrated, is most cases, right? An urn is very, very hot. I think it's more than Yatzel Edzba. So most kli shenis are really going to turn into a more of a chumrah than a normal kli sheni that the Gemara is talking about. Most kli shenis are going to be Yad Nichves Bo in our Metzias, in our time. So one would have to be careful about that, not to use all the kulas of a kli sheni, because it's even hotter than Metzias than a normal kli sheni, and even a normal kli rishon under normal circumstances. So that is the machlokas over here within kli rishon and kli sheni, how to understand kli sheni. Is it not mevashel because that's what the halacha is? It's just not mevashel because it's too far removed from the fire. Or like the Mishnah Berurah is paskening from the Chai Adam, like Tosos, no, the kli sheni is actually cooler in some way because the walls weren't heated by the fire. But if you did have a case that you could draw up where the kli sheni was even hotter than normal, so then you would have a chumrah, and that seemingly is the way we pass can. All the posts can bring this Mishnah Berurah lalacha, and not the Beis Yosef.
Is the chumrah together with kli shlishi, or wait the answer?
So okay, so let's talk about kli shlishi soon, because so you definitely think the kli shlishi is better. I mean, for any reason, maybe it cools down, maybe it's even more far removed. You could also wait till Yatzel Edzba. That would work. Yeah, you could wait till Yatzel Edzba to make it into a kli sheni, but would kli shlishi work? So hopefully. In source number 9, basically, we'll get to that. But in source number 5 for now, you asking something or no?
I'm saying the same issue with the cliche.
Good. So some people tie into that, yeah. That's going to be a machlokas haposkim. So why do they have to have machlokas? We have machlokas achim here. Why do we need a... Okay. Looks like it to me. So there's apparently this heter of kli sheni. There's apparently this kula of using a kli sheni to be mevashel, a second kli to be mevashel on Shabbos. We may have limited it in some cases where it's very hot, but a normal kli sheni that's only Yatzel Edzba, we have a heter from the Gemara. But if you had that, you'd think, so there you go. You got your heter for making tea, making coffee, making it a kli sheni, no issue whatsoever. But in source number 5, you see the Magen Avraham quotes two limitations on the heter of kli sheni, two important limitations, severe limitations on the heter of kli sheni. And instead of doing source number 5, let's do source number 6, which is what the Magen Avraham is really, really quoting from. So in 6 on the right side, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the earlier Rishonim, the Yireim and the Smag, that there is a chumrah. Yesh Misha Omer, there are some that say there's a chumrah, that even though normally we say ein bishul achar bishul, if something's fully cooked, that's a discussion, what it means fully cooked. Does that mean Mechel Ben Jusai? Does that mean more or less? That's a discussion in the Rishonim. But whatever it means fully cooked, if a food is fully cooked from before Shabbos and you want to now heat it up on Shabbos, is that bishul? So we hold ein bishul achar bishul. Does not constitute bishul to reheat something that's already fully cooked. That's not bishul. There are Yisurim Derabanan to return food to a fire, to put it on a stove that's not garif katim, to not have a blech, etc. But in general, actual bishul deraisa there won't be if it's already cooked before Shabbos. But the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Yireim and the Smag that there's a chumra here, that if you have something that was awfully, that was baked, or maybe roasted, that's a question also, baked or roasted, baked or roasted, let's say for now. So then you would have bishul achar afiyah or bishul achar tzliyah. Meaning, if you had a nice piece of bread that was fully baked before Shabbos, there's no issue of baking on Shabbos, now you want to put it in hot water, very hot water. You want to heat it up. So that would constitute bishul, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rishonim, and that's a chumrah. But the Shulchan Aruch then says, yesh matirim, there are those who are makil. Now, if you look in the writings of Rav Avad Yosef, he writes that the rule is that if the Shulchan Aruch quotes two yesh omrim, not stam and yesh, not no name and then name. Here he says just yesh omrim and yesh omrim. So then he always passes like the latter one, which means the Shulchan Aruch is mekiler. But if you look in the Ramah, right here in source number 6, the Ramah says very clearly for Bnei Ashkenaz that we are machmir on this. We're even more machmir than the Rishonim. But the Ramah says very clearly that we are machmir. So that would obviously mean that if you had a piping hot bowl of soup and you wanted to drop already baked bread into it, so that would constitute an issue of some sort of issue of bishul here, according to this Ramah. there are ways to get out of that. You could call the ladle a kli sheni and the bowl a kli shlishi. If you hold a kli shlishi, we'll get there. There are things to talk about there. Croutons might be different because they're actually fried, most of them not baked. But either way, the chumra here is that generally speaking, you can't cook something after it's been baked. That is asar on Shabbos, even though generally, ein bishel achar bishel. So that is important. So the Magen Avraham says, what's the pshat in this chumra? What is the pshat in this chumra? So he says, the pshat is, if you look in source number 5, if you look in the Rishonim, you'll see very clearly, it's spelled out in the Urim and the Smag. But the pshat in that chumra is that when you take something that is easily cooked, kale habishel, there are certain foods that they cook very easily. They're very thin, they're very fine, they're very soft, whatever it is. So they cook very easily. So bread was already baked, but it cooks so easily when you drop it into hot water. So those things, even though it's in a klisheni, you still have to be machmir that there is bishel. Kali habishel, things that cook very easily. That's an important term that we're learning now. Kali habishel, things that cook very easily. Those are usr even in a klisheni. Even though we just said a klisheni is mutter, it's ino mevashel. It's not mevashel normal things, but it is mevashel things that are easily cooked. Good. So the Magen Avraham says an important application now. The Ein Anu Bekiyim, source number 5. We are not experts. We don't know what is Kali Abishal, what's not Kali Abishal, what cooks easily, what doesn't cook easily. We don't know the definition. The Imkain, what? Bishar Dvarim, Nam Yesh Lahachmir. Therefore, says the Magen Avraham, we have to Machmir on everything. Unless we have an explicit Mishnah, an explicit Gemara, which tells us you are allowed to put this in a klisheni, oil. We saw in the Gemara that you're allowed to put oil in a klisheni. Anything else, says the Magen Avraham, you absolutely can't put even into a klisheni. Because we always have to be worried that it's from the kale habishel. It's something that cooks very easily. Even if we wouldn't think so with our minds. But lemaisa, we don't know. We're not experts. And therefore, we have to be machmir on everything. The Chazon Ish gives us a rare kula. The Chazon Ish says in Siman Nun Beis in Arachayim that he disagrees. The Magen Avraham is writing out a Gemara. This is a Gemara. And the Magen Avraham is saying it's not applicable at all. Says the Chazon Ish, we should say the exact flip. We know there's a concept of kale habishel. If the Gemara tells us that something is from Kali Abishal, you have to be Machmir. Otherwise, you can be Mikil. Everything else you can be Mikil, unless you're told to be Machmir. The accepted halacha is like the Magen Avraham. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Magen Avraham. The Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa quotes the Magen Avraham. Everyone quotes the Magen Avraham. Rav Moshe Feinstein was clearly held the Magen Avraham. Everyone holds the Magen Avraham that we are Machmir on all things that they might be Kali Abishal, unless we're told explicitly by a Gemara, by a Mishnah, that this is not from the Kali Abishal, and you would be allowed to put in a klisheni. So, what about tea and coffee? What would you think about tea and coffee? Oh, actually, let's before we do that, let's do the second thing that Magen Avraham says. There's a second limitation besides for Kali Abishal. If you look in, again, source number 5 or 6 on the left side, he quotes a Tosfos who points out that in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, even if it's mutter to cook something in a klisheni, it's going to be usher to cook something in a klisheni. And why is that? He says, because even if there's going to be ein bishel achar bishel, he says, in a case where something was it's not going to be, it's not kali abishel. If you pour water on it, it won't cook. So even though that's true, you're pouring from a klisheni onto some uncooked food on Shabbos, it won't actually cook it, but what's everyone going to think you're doing? Everyone's going to look and see you pouring hot water on a food. They're going to think you're cooking. It's not actually bishel, but it looks like bishel, it smells like bishel, and therefore that's usher because mechzi kimevashel, that's Lashon of Tosos here in source number 6 on the left side, mechzi kimevashel, it looks like cooking. The Magen Avraham quotes this and says that in most cases, if you're even if you're matering using a klisheni, in most cases if you're dumping some food into a klisheni, so it's going to be mechzi kimevashel, it's going to look like you're cooking. Now, if you pour the water from the klisheni onto the food, that doesn't look like cooking already. But to soak something, let's say like in our case we're dropping tea bags in, so if you soak something in a klisheni in order to heat it up and it looks like it's cooking, so then that's usher midirabana, not midaraisa, it's not real bishel, it's usher midirabana to do so because mechzi kimevashel, because it looks like it's cooking. So let's ignore that second issue because for a good reason, Tosfos seem to think that that tea, coffee, these type of things don't apply to that rule. So we don't have to worry about that second point in the Magen Avraham. What are the first point? Is tea and coffee from Kali Habishal, are they considered things that are easily cooked? So anyone have a guess what you would think? Doesn't matter what you guess. We just need for the recording, we need someone to guess something.
Yes.
That's the wrong guess, but I mean, good try. No. So if you look in source number 7, so the Mishnah in Shabbos seems to say very clearly that tavlin, spices, herbs, things like that, are usher to cook in a Kli Rishon, but mutter to cook in a klisheni, not mikali abishal. It seems very clear that spices, herbs, things like that are totally mutter to cook in a klisheni. They are not an issue of kali abishal. They are not easily cooked, and therefore we should have no issue with cooking tea and coffee because they're really just tavlin. They're really just spices that are spicing up your drink, herbs that you're soaking in your water, and therefore even in a klisheni, it should be totally mutter. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik famously was very makel about this, and it wasn't just him. He was makabel this from his father, who was makabel this from his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that you can be makel and cook tea regular, put a tea bag in a steaming hot cup of water if it's a kli sheni, which I think even most people in the room probably are not makel like that, to take, again, water from the urn, put into a cup, that's your kli sheni, and cook tea in that cup. It's a big kula. Most people are probably not familiar with that. But the Rav was make on that. Rav Schechter quotes this in person. He quotes it. He may agree la halacha. He quotes it in person. He quotes it also in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav. And he writes in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, the Rav used to say that he would tell the Talmidim, you know, my grandfather was also medakti b'mitzvos. He also had a lot of chumras. But even he thought that you're allowed to cook tea in a kli sheni. It was based on this Gemara. The Gemara seems to say very clearly that tea is not mikalei abishal. Herbs are not mikalei abishal. And you can put them into hot water in a kli sheni on Shabbos. Now, as a note, even if Rav Schechter and others do think, it's really not much others, Rav Schechter and the Soloveitchik dynasty thought maybe there was a kula here, but a person has to know. Halacha is not a smorgasbord of that you get to choose from. People have to know, do we take on the other chumras, the other kulas of the Rav? Do we really have a Masorah, really have a Kabbalah from him in other areas? So a person has to know, this is the halachic process, we need to know that this is out there. If you see someone making tea like this, you shouldn't call him a shegetz. I mean, maybe you shouldn't anyways, definitely not in Woodmere, but in Israel sometimes that goes, but you shouldn't do that. But should you take it on for yourself, such a kula? So that's something a person has to think about, whether we really shop around for those kulas or we stick with what's accepted, unless we have a specific kabbalah, unless we have a specific tradition on any particular kula or chumrah, really. If you flip over, you'll see that the mainstream opinion is absolutely not like Rav Soloveitchik and his grandfather. The mainstream opinion here is quoted from Rav Shlomo Zalman and Shmir Shabbos Kalchas in a footnote that maybe there was a difference. Back then, what are they talking about in the Gemara? They're talking about putting a stick of cinnamon or something hard like that into your... That's a tavlin, that's a spice. You're putting that into hot water. These fine, grounded powders, herbs, tea leaves, those things, the coffee, that's not a thick, hard item that you're cooking. That's a soft, easy thing that cooks very easily. And therefore, Zev would be right. That clearly is mikalei abishal, even though the Gemara says explicitly tavlin are not mikalei abishal, they're not easily cooked. But since the metzias has changed, we have different types of tavlin nowadays. They're more finely ground, they're more easily cooked, therefore they would be considered kalei abishal, and you have to be careful. You would not be allowed to cook tea, coffee, things like that, that were uncooked previously in a cup of water, even if it's a kli sheni. And that is the accepted practice. That's the Shmir Shabbos Kalchasa quotes over here, that's what Moshe Feinstein assumed. Really, basically, everyone assumed that you would not be allowed to make coffee in a kli sheni, except for, again, the Rav coming from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So, if that's the case, how does one make tea on Shabbos? How do you go about this process? So, if you look in source number 9, this is where we'll get to your point about kli shlishi. So, source number 9, Aleph. So, two places in Egros Moshe Rav Chaim, Chelek Dalet, Ayin Dalet. In Chelek Dalet, Ayin Dalet, he has Ha'aros al-Seder, the Malachos. So, he starts with all the Malachos, and then he lists a whole bunch of things that he got Shilohs about and gave Chuvas about. So, here it's in Bishel, in Sifkat Dal and Sifkat Tesvav, he says very clearly, Kol Kli Shishli Mekilin, we're always making on a Kli Shlishi, meaning a person cannot make tea in a Kli Sheni. He can't take from the urn, put it into a cup, and then cook tea in there. That's usher. He's not allowed to do that. But what Moshe says, if he pours it from that second cup into a third cup, that would be okay, because apparently there's a heter of Kli Shlishi. The Mishnah Berurah does bring up a concept of Kli Shlishi. The Mishnah Berurah brings it up in the context of what we spoke about before, that if you want to put bread in your soup, you can't do that if your soup's a kli sheni, because the Ramah told us we have to machmir that bread is kali abishal, bread is easily cooked, so you can't put bread in a steaming hot, or even not so steaming hot, kli sheni, as long as it's yatz lettuce bow. If it was a kli shlishi, the Mishnah Berurah says you'd be mekel, but the Mishnah Berurah doesn't think across the board you can be mekel, he just thinks in that one instance where it's a major chumr you can be mekel, but generally the Mishnah Berurah thinks we can't be mekel on a kli shlishi, as we'll see in a second. But the other person who disagreed was the Chaznish. If you look in source number 9, to the left, this is what you were saying. In Chaznish Orachaim Sim Nun Beis, that same thing we quoted before, he says, well, Indian Kli Shlishi, it's a bunch of baloney, he says. You can read it inside, he says that. It's a bunch of baloney, it's made up. What's the difference between a Kli Sheni and a Kli Shlishi? Who told you that the second you pour it into a third cup, it magically becomes a different thing? It's the same hot water, it's the same thing that's going to cook the same tea, going to cook the same coffee. How could you possibly make it? It doesn't make any sense. And that's what the Chaznish held, that really a Kli Shlishi is no better than a Kli Sheni. And if you said that, a Kli Revi, a Kli Chamishi, no matter how far down the line you went, it wouldn't make a difference. Really, as long as it's hot, it's not going to make any difference. The Chaznish thinks a Kli Shlishi, maybe you don't have the Chumr of the Chayadim from before. We can't really discuss that now, we don't have time. But in general, it's not better than a Kli Sheni as long as it's hot enough to be an issue. So that's what the Chaznish says, and the others agree to that as well, that there's really an issue in a Kli Shlishi too. Rav Moshe Feinstein, again, did have a kula over here, so I think this is probably more common practice, if I'm correct, that people generally will rely on this kula. They'll take water from the urn, again, they'll put it into a cup, they'll pour it into a Kli Shlishi, a third cup, and then they'll make their coffee, they'll make their tea, even with a tea bag very often, in that third cup. Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's totally fine. Somewhere they write, I don't know where it is, I don't see it right now in the place where I copied it, but somewhere they write or he writes that he did it himself like that. I don't know. But that is okay according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. The other Achronim, there are many other Achronim who disagree. The Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kalchasa says we should not make tea in a Kli Shlishi. Many disagree. But Rav Moshe Feinstein is what to rely on, at least in that regard. But if you don't rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein, as the Chaznish, as the Shmir Shabbos Kalchasa, as Rav Simcha Ban Kohn, others don't rely on Rav Moshe, so what do you do? How do you make tea? So the Mishnah Brura has a long discourse about this in Beis through Gimel, whatever, because it's two ways over here in source number 9. He has a long writing about how to make tea on Shabbos, and he gives two possible etzos suggestions as to how to make tea on Shabbos. The first is that on Erev Shabbos, a person should take the tea bag, put it into hot water, pour hot water over it, however you want to do it, and swish it around, swirl it around in the water for as long as you can, and make sure that it's fully cooked. Once the tea bag is fully cooked, you take it out of the water, you dry it out on Friday, you leave it out all day, whatever. By the time Shabbos comes around, it's dry already. If it's and you can then return it to a Kli Sheni, you could then put it into a Kli Sheni because it's already been cooked. It's already something that's been cooked, so you could soak it in a Kli Sheni. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says a person could do. He could, again, cook it on Erev Shabbos and then put it into a cup of water on Shabbos. That's totally okay. On Shabbos, he says you could even pour in hot water from a Kli Rishon, but yeah, you could definitely do a Kli Sheni if you do it like that. But the Mishnah Berurah says that's not the preferred way to do it. The preferred way to do it is that you should make what we call essence, right? That's something people are familiar with. You should take on Erev Shabbos or whenever you want to do it a whole bunch of tea bags and a little bit of water and make a very concentrated tea, very thick, thickly flavored tea, and make it in this hot water. Then on Shabbos, you can pour from that tea concentrate into your cup of water on Shabbos and make your tea that way. Depending on how hot the water is, you could either pour it into the hot water or pour the hot water into it. That's a detail. But that is the preferred way to do it, he says, to make all the essence, to make the tea essence or coffee essence too, on Erev Shabbos, and then use it on Shabbos in your regular utensils. That is a way that Mishnah Berurah says is okay, and that is the preferred method. Why is that preferred? Why is that better than the first way? So in the Shaar Tzion, the Mishnah Berurah writes over there in a footnote that the reason is, one of the reasons is because you don't know for sure that you cooked everything in the first way. So you poured hot water over a tea bag on Erev Shabbos. You tried to mix it around, you tried to make it cook. You don't know, you might have missed a leaf over here, a leaf over there. It might not be fully cooked. If it's not fully cooked and you're going to put it into hot water or pour hot water onto it on Shabbos, you're going to be mamish over in Issur D'oraisa of Bishul. So because of that, the Mishnah Berurah says the best way to do it is really to make this essence on Erev Shabbos. I know this isn't necessarily the most popular way of going about things, but it's definitely what the Mishnah Berurah thinks. He doesn't think Rav Moshe's kula is okay. He thinks one of these two kulas should be okay. And whatever, we should consider. It's not so crazy to take on chumras and Hilchos Shabbos, especially if they don't inconvenience us too much. So the Mishnah Berurah has an interesting chumra over here that seems, he doesn't think it's a chumra, he thinks Me'ikar Din. He thinks this is really the only way to go about making tea on Shabbos, so something to consider in people's practice of Hilchos Shabbos. Now, that takes us through regular tea, regular coffee, that type of thing. But what about instant coffee? What about instant tea? Things that were clearly heated, dehydrated, cooked in some factory somewhere, and now you're going to go and put them into water to make them into your drink. So how do you go about doing that on Shabbos? So the Rav Shimon Eider, in source number 10, I don't think you only see the second half of what I'm about to say, but in his Halachos of Shabbos book, he quotes that Rav Moshe Feinstein agreed to the following thing, that he thinks that since the powder that you're using, this instant coffee, this instant tea, is completely cooked, it's totally, totally mavushal in the factory, they heat it up to such a high degree that it's completely cooked through and through, now you're going to put it in water and turn it into a liquid, but you're not cooking it, it's already been cooked. So we apply the concept of ein bishul achar bishul, and therefore there's no issue of cooking your powdered instant coffee in a kli on Shabbos. I guess then it doesn't matter if it's a kli rishon, kli sheni. Well, no. You still would want to use a kli sheni, I guess. No, you could use a Kli Rishon, sorry, according to that. Sorry, it gets confusing. Rav Avadya Yosef says you could even pour from a Kli Rishon onto this instant coffee. But according to this Kula, you could use a Kli Rishon to cook the instant coffee, the instant tea on Shabbos, and that should be no issue. But Rabbi Eider quotes, and this is in source number 10, that there may be room to be machmir. He says that Rabbi Aaron Cutler was machmir to always use a Kli Shlishi for instant coffee on Shabbos. And he says that the reason might be that because, let's say you took instant coffee and you put cold water into it. So how would that taste? Not so geschmack, not great. So because of that, you see very clearly that the hot water that you're using on Shabbos is doing something. Whether it's cooking or it's halacha cooking, whatever you want to define that, it's doing something. It's adding to the process. And if that's the case, maybe there's room to be machmir, and that's what he quotes from Aaron Cutler, to be machmir. In the more contemporary svarim, the Shabbos Kitchen, or Simcha Banim Cohen's book, so he says that he quotes the Kula. He says, really, it's okay to be mekel. He quotes there a machmirim to use a kli shlishi, but really, Iker then he thinks it's totally okay to use a kli sheni. And like we said, Rav Avadya Yosef is even more mekel on instant coffee, that if you have instant coffee, he thinks you could pour from the urn onto the instant coffee powder. Ashkenazim, it's not as clear that we'd be mekel about that, but at least in a kli sheni, we should certainly be able to be mekel. Again, if you want to take on the chumrah, so you pour it into one more cup, not such a big deal. Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Shimon Eider suggest it's possible that it makes sense to be machmir for that as well. But that is how we go about instant coffee. The same applies to instant tea on Shabbos. The other issue, one other issue of coffee that comes up on Shabbos is iced coffee. Really, the only other way I know about drinking coffee is iced coffee. So is there any difference between making iced coffee and making coffee on Shabbos? So assuming you're making the coffee on Shabbos or beforehand, the only difference is you need ice, right? That's the only difference. Don't eat it after a flaging meal if you're adding in milk. But besides for that, in terms of Shabbos, you need to make ice. So is there any issue of making ice on Shabbos? Is there any issue of making ice on Shabbos? I think a lot of people are confused about this issue. So Rav Shechter writes in his Sefer Mipnina Harav that Rabbi Rafin was the Friedika principal of MDS, Friedika for me. My wife's grandfather was the principal of MDS for a whole lot of years, Rav David Kamenetsky. So the one right before him was Rabbi Rafin. Rabbi Rafin used to write ask a lot of shaylos to the Rav, to Rav Soloveitchik. And in this piece, in Rav Shechter's book, he quotes Rabbi Rafin's question to Rav Soloveitchik, but apparently he asked three gedolim about making ice on Shabbos. Are you allowed to make ice on Shabbos? So he asked Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein said it's totally mutter. It's so temporary, it's so fleeting, it's going to melt in a second. It's not a big deal to make ice on Shabbos. No issue whatsoever. That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein said. Rav Aaron Cutler said it's usser. And he said the reason is because it's molid. You're making a new thing on Shabbos. You're not allowed to create something from scratch on Shabbos. It used to be water, now it's ice. That's considered molid. You're making something new. So that's Aser on Shabbos. That would only be Aser Midir Rabbanon, according to Rav Aaron Cutler. But he asked the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Soloveitchik said it's Aser Del Raisa on Shabbos to make ice. Why? It's bone. It's building. Okay, interesting chiddush. It's like you're making the water into a structure, into a new thing. That's not just mole, that's bone, that's binyan, that's building on Shabbos. That could potentially be an Iser Del Raisa. That's what the Rav said at Chumrah, that it would be Aser Del Raisa. So most of the poskim agree, and Rav Avadya Yosef is much more mekel about this in a Tshuva and Chelek Aleph and Vichav Adas. He's much more mekel about this, but in general, the Ashkenazi poskim do assume that it's usher to make, one should avoid, making ice on Shabbos. If you look in source number 11, you'll see that from the Shemir Shabbos Kalchasa. One should certainly avoid making ice on Shabbos. He says, B'shas v'chad gadol, if you absolutely need it, I don't know what such a case would be, you absolutely need ice. The Shemir Shabbos says that there might be room to make it, but generally we're very machmir about that. We try to avoid making ice. But everyone agrees that you could use ice that's already made. So if you had ice from before Shabbos and you want to put that into your cup of coffee to make it iced coffee, that shouldn't be an issue at all. There are different ways to go about it. Put the ice in first, put the drink in first. You could figure that out on your own. But to take the ice and use it, it shouldn't be an issue on Shabbos. It should be noted that if a person has a freezer with a contraption that makes ice for you, an automatic ice maker, so that presents other issues because depending on which model you have, so sometimes there's like an infrared sensor that senses the level of the ice, and when it gets to below a certain level, it makes new ice, or sometimes the weight shift is different. You know, if you take out an ice cube, it knows that you took out an ice cube, it makes one more, or if you take out 10, it makes 10 more, whatever the case is. But a person has to know, if he's going to take out ice on Shabbos, is he going to cause a whole electrical process to go on and make new ice on Shabbos? Never mind the issue of making ice, he's going to be doing other issues with electricity on Shabbos. So if a person has such a machine, there you have to be careful about using ice on Shabbos. But generally speaking, you shouldn't make ice from scratch on Shabbos. You shouldn't put water in the freezer for so long that it becomes ice on Shabbos. But if you already had ice that was there from beforehand, there's no issue with using it and making yourself a nice cup of iced coffee. Okay, so those are the major issues I wanted to discuss about Hilchos Shabbos when it comes to coffee. Making Kiddush and Avdalah, we said really no. Really a person should definitely not make Kiddush or Avdalah on coffee, with milk, without milk, with sugar, without sugar. It doesn't really matter. in extreme, extreme cases, one case we said was a deathbed, but even other cases where it's totally extreme and you have no other choice, so if Moshe Feinstein was willing to be Megill, but generally speaking, it's not the way to go to use coffee for your Chamar Medina, for your Havdalah, your Kiddush. We define the Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni, which is an important concept to know about in all of Hilchos Bishul on Shabbos, to know what a Kli Rishon is, what a Kli Sheni is, and what the difference is between the Rashi and the Tosos as to how the Heter of Kli Sheni works, whether it's halachically different or scientifically different. We discussed the limitations to the Heter of Kli Sheni, the Magen Avraham's two limitations. If something is easily cooked, or if something looks like it's being cooked, so that's an issue. And whether or not it applies to tea and coffee was subject to a dispute amongst the poskim. The Rav was makel on that, but everyone else pretty much in the Minhag Olam is to be machmir, not to use a Kli Sheni to make tea, not to use a Kli Sheni to make normal coffee. We're usually machmir on that. How to go about making tea and coffee, so that was also subject to a dispute, because Moshe Feinstein was makel on a Kli Shlishi, others are not makel on a Kli Shlishi. The Mishnah Berurah had two ways of going about being machmir and making tea, even without being made on a Kli Shlishi. And then instant coffee, we discussed that it's a little more kal, it's a little easier because it's already fully cooked in the factory. So really in a Kli Sheni, you could do whatever you want, basically. Potentially you could be machmer and use a Kli Shlishi, Ravon Cutler would, but others were made on that. Rav Moshe Feinstein for sure was made on that. And iced coffee, we said you shouldn't make ice lichatchila on Shabbos, but to use ice, as long as you're not setting off some machine in your freezer, is no issue. Okay, so thank you all for a wonderful summer. I guess enjoy your coffee. Next week we will not be meeting. Have a wonderful night.